I guess there's a couple of things. We're on the seventh commandment. Do not commit adultery. And I want to go there some today, a little different, approach or angle. But it's Thanksgiving. One of my favorite holidays from the standpoint that it is the least, it has been in the past, one of the least corrupted by our culture. I mean, our culture has done really, really well to make Easter about Easter Bunny and Christmas about Santa Claus. And, the degeneration that's happened in the process of that. Thanksgiving up until recently has become about, was about giving thanks somehow and being thankful for, and we still talked about the pilgrims and turkeys and things like that. It was legitimate holiday where people were thankful to God for provision, thankful to God they were alive. I mean, you know, it's hard to believe they came to the wilderness of America and almost starved to death. You know, they didn't do so well, you know, their first couple years. But it was legitimate. I would contend that we need to actively, and I might step on some toes here, but oh well. I guess there's a first time for everything, huh? So, now it's become about Black Friday. And, you know, it's such a radical shift that we went from having a holiday that was celebrating thankfulness to God to a holiday that is just being consumed in covetousness. You know, I mean, it couldn't be more opposite, diabolically opposite. You know, you can say, well, I'm thankful for sales. And it's just this covetous attitude. I mean, this year it was wild. Now they have this one of these stupid little phones, you know. I mean, it started like first of the week, man, popping up, you know, all these Black Friday sale, you know, first of the week. And it's like, oh my gosh. You know, now stores are open on Thursdays even. So I am going to stand in opposition. I'm not saying we shouldn't be frugal with our money. That's not the issue. But I would encourage you to resist that vehemently and violently. To make this day, because it is really important for us to be thankful. And I would even go to the extent of saying, and trust God to give you the deals you need to get the presents you want, you know. Are the presents that are, you know, are going to meet the needs in the family, the gifts. Because it's about, you know, it's thankfulness and it's about giving is what these holidays, what this time is about. And we are going to have to work hard. You know, I don't know where the slow slide of degeneracy happened, you know, in the whole Easter thing or in the whole Christmas thing. You know, but it was, I'm sure, a slow slide. And this is a pretty quick one. Pretty quick slide that's happening in Thanksgiving. And I would just, you know, rather than being thankful for the basics of food and shelter and the things that are really important in life, again, Black Friday is about, you know, incredible materialism and covetousness and ungratefulness even. Obviously, you know, I doubt if I would have seen any of you on cameras fighting other people for large screen TVs or something, you know, on it. So, but that, you know, it's still something in the heart and it's hard to get away from, especially with these stupid little alarm devices on us, right? That keep popping up, you know, oh, this thing, you know, and they've learned you and they know you, you know. I mean, I don't get any ads from Target, but I do from outdoorsmen and Koyu and Cabela's and things like that, you know, that says we got a sale for you just to meet your needs. So, I mean, it's, we are going to have to, I would just encourage you with ourselves and our children, to initiate and come against the wrong and instigate and initiate the right in thankfulness. It's a tough one. Thankfulness. You know, I'll read something here because I really want to ask you guys and, you know, to, what are we thankful for? You know, what are we thankful for? And because there should be, it should be something that as a family, as a friends, you know, there's things to be incredibly thankful for. There in Romans, the first chapter, you know, we talk about, it talks about thankfulness and being thankful to God, and something that, and this isn't where I want to land today, but this is a place where I think it's really important. God says that, "For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who suppress the truth in unrighteousness, because that which is known about God is evident within them, for God made it evident to them. For since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes, his eternal power, and his divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood through what he has made, so that they are without excuse. For even though they knew God, they did not honor him as God or give thanks, but became futile in their speculations. And their foolish heart was darkened. Professing to be wise, they became fools and exchanged the glory of the incorruptible God for an image in the form of corruptible man and of birds and four-footed animals and crawling creatures." And it goes on to say, "And therefore God gave them over." You know, we talk about marriage and what does that look like, and, you know, what is the marriage as God created it? And a homosexual marriage is not a marriage. Just say that, you know, it's not a marriage, okay? It might be a civil agreement or a civil contract that you have in our society, but it is not marriage. Is God designed marriage in any way, shape, or form? Homosexuality is the result of men refusing to honor God and to give thanks. So you look at that and you say, okay, what does that look like in our lives? What does it mean we honor God and give thanks? You know, I just want to encourage all of us, to honor God for who he is and to give thanks. His eternal power and his divine nature have been seen through what he has made. And I kind of grew up my whole life using that as a great excuse to go spend time in the mountains, right? Because it's all about God's eternal power and his divine nature. In nature he's made, right? So I'm out in nature. And truthfully, his eternal power is displayed in his handiwork, in his creation, doing it. But I would contend that his divine nature is revealed through the order of things that God established in this world. Fathers, the unconditional love of a father, marriage. These are institutions that God put in place. These are things that God put in place from day one. Right? When the Pharisees confronted Jesus about what was right and what was wrong in marriage and divorce, where'd he go to? Genesis chapter 2, right? In the beginning, God made him. God made them male and female, and the two shall become one flesh, right? And from the beginning, God instituted the institution of marriage and the institution, therefore, of family and institution of fathering. And I guess that's really the place I want to go to. And that, you know, today is, and he comes up with this thing, do not commit adultery. And I think it's really important, as he did, explaining it why. You know, because it's not nice, because it's bad, it's not good. I think that one of the great problems we have is, you know, we're not thankful because we don't reflect on the nature and character of God as a bridegroom of the church. And are thankful for that. So, you know, he says that his wrath comes against all men because they who do not honor him and are not thankful. So the truth of it is, if we don't wake up and are determined by and motivated by thankfulness to God, that doesn't just mean for groceries. I mean, most of us in this room have probably been in that position where I'm really thankful for groceries, you know, enough gas to get to work and, you know, some of the basics in life. And those things are good to be thankful for, absolutely good to be thankful for. But the truth is, is that are we thankful that Jesus Christ, as a bridegroom, as a bridegroom of the church, is the husband of the church, is the husband of his bride, of his beloved bride, the church, pursued us, courted us, wooed us, went after us, provided a way, forgave us, relentlessly loved us, in spite of our unfaithfulness and our adultery. And that God as a Father has represented unconditional love. And he's proven that and shown that. And, you know, we should be motivated and moved by thankfulness. And I honestly think that that is an attitude and a heart that is pursued and cultivated. Okay? And it's one of the reasons I want to, willing to put us on the spot a little bit, you know? Make us a little uncomfortable. Because I think it's something that we have to pursue to be thankful, especially in our culture. I mean, our culture is very covetous. Our culture is very unsatisfied, right? We have this insatiable drive to succeed, right? To have more. If I only had this, if I only had that, I would be happy. It's easy to fall into, you know. Mine's got a big G in front of it. You know, if I had that gun, I would be really happy, you know, or something. I mean, it's really easy to, if I could have this much time to go hunting, if I could do, you know, now we're coming, you know. At one point I had the couple and now I don't. Now I'm going to again, you know, doing it. So he's getting my motorcycle. The only one I have has a pink fob in it, and he's getting it all dirty right now, you know, on it. Oh, if I just had another motorcycle. Doesn't matter. In our culture, that is propagated. How do you get a consumer-oriented society to maintain? You get them to buy things they don't need. And that's why the vast majority, almost the entirety of our advertising is non-informative. It's just telling you why you should have it, you know, why you need it, why it'll make you happy, right? And it's, we live in this world, and don't think we don't. It's everywhere. It's everywhere. And now we have these great institutions of book and whatnot that cause envy, right? I mean, isn't that the, we don't think about it. But that's a primary motivator in Facebook, right? If I can post something on there and people go, oh, I wish I was there. I wish I could eat that. I wish I had that thing. In envy, if they envy us, what does that mean about me? Oh, I have value. You want to be like me? You want to have what I have? That means I'm worth something. That means that I have value and significance. If I can get people to send me is there an emoji that's envy? It's a smile or smiley face or something, you know, things you do. Push the emoji, the envy emoji. I wish there should be one of those, right? Envy emoji. That wouldn't come across as well. It'd be better to, I like you. You know, anyway, we have this culture that is insatiable in that, right? So my encouragement in that is that we need to cultivate that with ourselves, with our spouses, with our kids, to be grateful, to be thankful for. So, anybody have anything in their pocket? Or actually, probably not in their pocket, huh? From their heart, that we're thankful for. I mean, I'm sure that over the holidays, I mean, we, it stumbled and bumbled a little this year. One of the great parts of Thanksgiving, one of our favorite parts of Thanksgiving is thankfulness. And we tend to do this thankful box. We've done it for a lot of years, and everybody puts little things they're thankful for, a little piece of paper, and then we split them up and everybody pass them around and we read them. You know, however you do it isn't the issue. You know, it's not a sacred thing. But it's been a wondrous thing in the past. It got a little confusing this year, particularly because all of a sudden now we've got all these kids that are starting to write and scribble and draw pictures and stuff, and they all want to put stuff in and doing it. So we tried to do a little separate kids thing and deal. Anyway, I don't know quite how to, you know, walking through the 47,000 grandkid thing hanging around the house is a different world, man. I mean, how do you, you know, there was a time when You'll say, oh, you'll miss it. Well, I don't know, you know. I mean, it's sweet, you know, and I wouldn't trade it for anything, but at times it's a bit crazy. And, you know, it's all the kids. I mean, you guys know that. So, but it's something that we try to cultivate in thankfulness. And I'm incredibly thankful for where we are now. You know, I'll start it and say, you know, I am thankful beyond words for my marriage, for my wife, for God's grace and His redemption and His forgiveness and His mercy, and allowing my wife and I to begin to build a relationship that is what I've dreamed my whole life about, you know, and is getting better and better all the time as it's not the thankfulness I pull out of my pocket, it's my head, you know, and begin to be a friend and a husband as God has called me to. And tell you what, God is merciful, and that He is, you know, we have that chaos of kids and the ability to share in that because God has been forgiving and merciful in that. So I am, and I can use that one from the depths of my heart, not just out of my pocket. So anybody else? Anybody thankful for anything? Something that was just pressed on my heart, on my mind, on every part of me this week was just the magnitude of God's perspective of marriage. You know, we talk about, I'll say this as briefly as I can. Try to trust that, okay? Yeah, 7. Maybe. I want to challenge you guys. I guess I've been hugely challenged by it. I've made me hugely challenged by my failure to live it out. In my 39 years of marriage. But, you know, the seventh commandment is, do not commit adultery. And I would contend that that doesn't mean a whole lot or have a whole lot of weight outside of understanding God's perspective of marriage. You know, when your marriage is unfulfilling and empty, and shallow, and selfish, adultery is appealing. You know, how do we live out? You know, the truth is that the way that we deal with sin correctly is by agreeing with God about it. That's the baseline. That's the baseline for appropriating the work of Jesus. Confession is not saying I'm sorry. I don't think God puts a lot of stock in I'm sorry. It's do you agree with Him about our sin, which will bring great sorrow, no doubt. But saying I'm sorry is often out of our pocket, not out of our heart. And I just want to challenge you. We'll go there next week now because Levi took up all the time. But God's perspective on marriage is profound. It's so much deeper and bigger. I think that one of the great ploys of the enemy in our culture worldwide is to diminish marriage and beat it down. You know, it's why does the acceptance of a homosexual civil contract, calling it a marriage, why does that matter? It really does matter. It matters to a generation. It matters to a people. You know, the adage that evil triumphs when good men are silent is very important. God's view of marriage is a foundation for most everything we do. There is no greater intimate, important relationship in our human existence than our marriage. More than our kids, more than our families, more than where we came from. That marriage is, God calls us to be salt and light in the world. He calls us to live that out. There is nothing that displays the character of God than a marriage lived out the way God intends it to be lived out. In the last few weeks, we've talked about the sexual part of it, and that a marriage before God is a covenant relationship where each person makes a covenant before God, and that marriage is consummated in sexuality, in that process beginning of becoming one flesh. That is the example that God set up from creation, from the beginning, to represent Christ in the church. Okay? We, living in this day and age, the day and age we live, it represented, you know, Israel was his betrothed, right? Israel is who he redeemed, as a groom redeems his bride. We now are, and I'll, you know, there is the challenge, and Ephesians 5 just hammered on me this week. And I've not lived it out very well in my life. There is a mark that is so much higher than what we hold it to. And in that relationship of intimacy, of nothing between us, holiness, of becoming one flesh in our marriage, if we do not understand that and believe that and see it from God's perspective, no wonder our churches are a mess. No wonder our churches are a mess. Because we don't understand, and I'll put this, calling as husbands. We are called, and we either represent correctly, or we misrepresent to any and everyone around us Jesus' response to the church. And the charge to men is so high and so far beyond. Get to be good husbands and be nice and try to get along. You know, even Melissa, I was thinking about it this week. Even the few marriages that you end up seeing that the two of them seem really close. You know, so often those people are off doing their own thing and acting in their own way and off taking, have a good relationship. You have to excuse me, but in some ways acting selfishly. The purpose is not just for a man and woman to bring great happiness to each other. The purpose is for that one flesh serving the body and representing Jesus Christ. A truly healthy marriage will be lived out in unity, in intimacy, in a joyous, healthy relationship serving the body. And we are the bride of Christ. And I know you've all heard it. Ephesians 5 is a passage that we talk a lot about here, around here, and all of you are familiar on some level with it. But I just beg you, don't become callous to it. It's pretty profound. Let me just read this. And I challenge you to read it this week because you say, why is marriage so important? Why is the sanctity of marriage? Why is the relationship of a man and wife so important? Why is becoming one flesh so important? I mean, Jesus, you know, we talked about it the last couple of weeks. Jesus' heart was, this is an inseparable relationship. If Jesus didn't keep his covenant relationship with us, we'd all be going to hell, right? Because I guarantee every one of us in our room, this room has broken it. Our side of the marriage. We've all been, you know, why is it such a big deal, adultery such a big deal? Because we have been adulterous in our relationship with God. Think about other things, let other things occupy our time, let other priorities be in our life, give our fondness of our affection to other things. One of the great, great paths is Hosea, and us understanding what God's heart on marriage is, right? And God's heart on marriage was representing, God's heart on marriage was represented in the prophets oftentimes. Oftentimes he had the prophets live out his example and what he was trying to show. And he told Hosea, he said, go marry a whore. Go marry Gomer, who is a whore. And have children with this whore. And be faithful to this whore. And I am even going to give you an affection for this whore. And your heart is going to break. And your heart is going to, your life is going to be, your heart is going to break over this, but you are to remain faithful and to redeem this. That is God's heart on marriage. That is heart. As men, we are absolutely responsible for acting towards our bride like Christ acted towards the church. We're not only responsible, we're responsible to woo them, to go after them, to woo them, to forgive them, to be unrelenting in our love towards them. In our love towards them, again, you guys all understand, when he says, as Christ loved the church, I would be really... I can't imagine that there aren't times when Jesus doesn't like me and like what I'm doing very much. Love is not like. That's not what he says. He doesn't say like him a whole bunch, and that means love him. He says lay his life down. Regard them in their life is more important than your own. Most of us give about enough to get what we need out of marriage. He says we're to relentlessly, as Jesus pursued the church and forgave, right? We are, the standard in calling, and is so much higher than we hold it to. We have allowed the enemy to diminish that in our culture and our value. We can set it aside. We can quit on it. We can get divorced. We can look for the right one. We can find one that makes us happy because this one doesn't. I mean, the culture has just done this to marriage. And God's heart is, it represents Jesus Christ and His church. It represents the true Christians and Jesus Christ. And if there is nothing more important we can do in this world as a testimony to that than living that out. Living that out as husbands and wives and what that looks like. That doesn't mean we try to put on a good impression. We try to make it look like it's good and it's healthy. That means live it from the depths of our soul. I challenge us as men. Do we really love our brides as Christ loved the church and died for it, laid his life down, gave his life up for our brides? I haven't, and I'm sorry. And I'm challenged, you know, fortunately, my longing for more life, there's a side of me that at times goes, if I found out I was going to die soon or something, I'd go, sweet. But I long to redeem what the enemy has tried to steal. You know, that has been a process that has happened and is happening, and I hope to happen to an extent that goes far beyond. You know, there's nothing that will stand out in this culture in this day and age like that either. And there's nothing that we fought against as hard as that, right? In this culture, because the enemy, the marriage is being attacked. You read this, you guys have heard it, but please, I beg you, do not get hard-hearted towards it. I would challenge you all to read it, particularly you men. Not that the wives aren't charged here, because the wives are charged here, okay? But as we said before, if I love my wife, most of us make it so incredibly difficult for our wives to be obedient to God. They don't get a hall pass because of that. To submit, to respect, to reverence, to have absolute trust but absolute fear, because the word is phobia, okay? To have a relationship, to submit, as he says, as the church is to submit to the truth of Jesus Christ. That's not subjective, that's not our way, that's not me making it up, that's not what I want to, right? Is that how it works with this? Or is this the truth of God, and we submit to it, or we'll rebel against it? Right? It says. That's what it says about wives. The charge is hard. But we as men make it extremely difficult. We should set a platform where our wives can trust us, where we are trustable, where they want to submit, they're willing to submit. I mean, men, understand the way God made women. If you were that guy, like Jesus is towards the church, your wife would be all you could hope for. Because she would, I mean, again, God made women capable of loving pugs, right? Completely irrational. I know. Completely irrational in thinking, you know. But he gave them, and once that's it, man, they're in, right? They can love us, right? If they're willing to submit and trust and give in to in a situation that is safe. Why be subject to your own husbands as to the Lord? Same. Big statement, okay? We're not talking about the wives here. We're talking the husbands here. For the husband is the head of the wife, as Christ also is the head of the church. Again, this interrelationship of the bride and the groom, of the church being the bride of Christ, that is what we are supposed to live out and represent. He himself being the Savior of the body. But as the church is subject to Christ, so also wives ought to be to their husbands in everything. Husbands. Because we are to be the leaders. We are to be the examples. We are to be the heads of our home. This is not our throne. It's not our castle. It's not our place where we rule from. It's our place where we serve from. It's our place of service. Husbands, love your wives just as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for it. I would challenge you, don't let that come out of your mouth without chewing on it awful hard. I mean, do I really die to myself when it comes to my relationship relentlessly die to myself in my relationship with my wife? I don't. And I'm sorry. That's what we're called to. That's what we are called to. As Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her, that he might sanctify her. Does your wife have issues? Is there things that aren't perfect in your wife? Are you kidding me? I mean, if you look really hard, is there something that's not perfect in your wife? Guess what? Your fault. Your problem. Not your fault necessarily, but your problem. Okay? Might sanctify her, having cleansed her by the washing of water with the word, and he might present to himself the church in all her glory, or wife in all her glory, having no spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that she should be holy and blameless. So husbands ought to love their own wives as their own bodies. He who loves his own wife loves himself. That's one that we've unpacked in the past. I encourage you to continue to unpack that and not take it from a cultural standpoint. It isn't about self-esteem and loving myself, okay? So husbands ought to love their wife, their own wives as their own bodies. He who loves his own wife loves himself, for no one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes it and cherishes, or keeps it warm, feeds it and keeps it warm as his own body, just as Christ does the church. Christ meets our needs. Christ takes care of us. Jesus knows our hearts. He knows our position. He knows our state. He knows what's best for us. He knows what we need, right? We don't have to tell him. He knows those things. We are to be that way towards our wife. We are to know them intimately. The implication then is, you don't need to tell me when I'm hungry or I'm cold. Or I'm hot because the heater's running too hard, right? You don't have to tell me that. I know that inherently, right? We should know our wives the same way. That example of us becoming one flesh with our wives is the example of Jesus in the church in this world. No one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes and cherishes it, just as Jesus, just as Christ also does the church, because we are members of his body. For this cause, here we go, Paul quoting the same thing, Genesis 2, right at the beginning. For this cause a man shall leave his father and mother and shall cleave to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. This mystery is great, but I am speaking with reference to Christ in the church. Why is marriage important? Why is adultery so bad? And again, said, well, I haven't committed adultery. I haven't gone out and had sex with any women. Jesus said, that's not it. That's not it. If you've been unfaithful in your heart, you know, we live in a world that is pounded by it. This mixed workplace is a terrible, dangerous place. We have men and women working together in the same place. Didn't used to be that way. It's a pretty new deal on it, culturally doing it. But there is an unbelievable amount, the statistics are huge, of unfaithfulness that happens. Not just physical unfaithfulness, but emotional unfaithfulness. Okay? Emotional unfaithfulness, where somebody, you know, this co-worker's nice with me, this co-worker always with me, they always say nice things. And I find a sense of value and begin to have an emotional relationship that goes on. Facebook relationships, you know. Are we to have intimate relationships and fellowships with husbands and wives and other husbands and wives and other sisters and brothers? Yeah. But as Mark says, you start going out to coffee with my wife all the time, we ain't going to do so well, okay? The light went on. I'm sorry for stumbling. But the light went on about how important that faithfulness, that lack of adultery is. And that's what God was representing from day one. That's what he said, you'll have no other gods before me. You should not make graven images. He says, I'm a jealous God. Okay? That we are to be that relationship. And you know, the sweet thing about it is we are in danger, always in danger of sin when our marriages are empty because we don't do it God's way. You know, I just want to encourage you that the more intimate, and I think it's kind of been, I think it would be agreed on around here, the less crap there is between us, the more intimate, and the more we move towards being one flesh, the better our marriages get. God intended it to be that way. The more there is purity, the more there is holiness, the more there is oneness, the more there is the interaction of Christ in the church in our marriage, where we as men are laying our lives down. That doesn't mean that we're to be passive, pathetic little crying boys. Sorry, we set a bad example today, you know. But we are not to be passive men. It was stated a few times in here. There's few things that give me greater joy than to know that I am not serving my God in this country with passive men. I am serving him with warriors, men who are willing to fight, men who are willing to lay their lives down. To me, that is essential and critical because we're in a fight. But in that, it is not my throne that I, you know, it is such a mess out there, you know, whether it's our culture or other cultures. within the church, it's often seen is the in other cultures. I mean, I have somebody struggling with it big time right now, that it is the obligation and duty of a wife and children to serve the husband in their calling. That is their purpose. That is what they're there for. No. It's the obligation of a husband to love his wife as Christ loved the church. And that doesn't mean that it's just the two of you that go off doing your own little thing, and aren't they just best friends and a couple of selfish people that just become more selfish and meet each other's needs. That means that as one flesh serve the body and loving on other people. So, I just want to push you guys that there is another level of understanding of intimacy in marriage that is beyond what we know. And to the degree we move towards that, what God has called us to in that, we will know holiness. We will know purity. We will have strength over sin. Be able to resist the devil. And it's what's so critical is, in this culture, what will we model to our children? What will we truly model? Because our children, God set it up this way. He set them up for them to look truly, correctly, and clearly, consciously or subconsciously, at their parents and see what is real. It doesn't matter what you say. It doesn't matter the words you use. See what they saw. Representing that correctly in this day and age is absolutely essential and critical. Because it is misrepresented in a big way. There is a day when they will probably come knocking on that door. If I say gay marriage is not a marriage. It is a civil contract between two people, but it is not a marriage in God's eyes. It is not okay. It is happening. Already. So we have to stand firm in not only seeing what is right, not be legalists, not be religious, self-righteous people who speak of one thing, but people who live it out in our marriages. My heart, the great joy for me in watching in the last 8 years has been watching marriages flourish and be restored. That has been a sweet, sweet thing. The greatest joy to me in my life. So, thank you for letting me share in that. Let's pray. God, you said it from day one. You said it in the beginning. In the beginning of the book, you wrote it in Revelation where the wife of the Lamb is revealed. It's from beginning to end in it. And if the enemy can set an example, especially those who call themselves little Christ, set an example of something counter or different from how you meant it to be, this world will not know God. This world will be left in darkness. God causes us to realize that the essential, critical nature of pure, holy, marriage is representing Jesus' response to the church. I ask you would challenge us men to have that perspective. I thank you for the men that you worked in their lives. I thank you for turning lights on in our lives to realize the sacredness and importance and value. And in the process, you're such a good dad. You bless us. You bless us when we are obedient, when we live in the way you designed it. So, God, please challenge us. Cause us to be grateful. We're moving from this time in the next 2 weeks and the busyness and the craziness of moving towards the celebration in our country. What a profound thing that we can celebrate you, Jesus, coming into this world. and the salvation that that brought us, the only hope that that brought us. And God, caused us to be in thankfulness and hope in giving how you gave your son. You gave him not only to come and live here and fulfill what he needed to fulfill, but part of that fulfillment was dying and suffering. That's the ultimate gift that you gave to us as a father. And caused us to be in such gratitude for the gift you've given. Causes us our giving to only want to instill that heart. Not greed, not covetousness. Causes us to reorient with our children that we would not be, they would not be, but I want, but I want, but I want. But would reorient towards how can I give? How can I represent what this day is about? With this whole thing of God coming into this earth and his gift to mankind. So God, please cause us to encourage each other, to teach each other, to admonish each other, to reprove and correct if necessary, that we would be an example of what Jesus, you did for the church. I thank you for that privilege and that honor of living that out. Thank you, as was said, for your word, which gives us that direction on it, that we don't have to guess what marriage is supposed to look like, what holiness is supposed to look like, what becoming what flesh. We don't have to define marriage on our own, but you've defined it. And I thank you for that. Amen.